Well, you know, you're getting close to the start of the regular season when the news just keeps flowing in. It is Thursday. Sean, we got news, goalie news, lots of it. And we're going to dive right into it here on the NHL At The Rink podcast. And let's start with Carey Price. Sean, I mean, this one was a shocker, came out of left field. He is leaving the Montreal Canadiens to voluntarily go into the NHL, NHLPA Player Assistance Program. How are you? And now what do you think of Carey Price?
I'm good. Thanks for asking. And bravo to Carey Price. I think the circumstances aren't awesome, but the bravery that he's showing in doing this and doing it now as the season's about to start, I think is an amazing message to send to his peers and to everybody that supports hockey, that your mental health is bigger than anything to do with your job, with who you are, or any of that. So, you know, on a personal level, great for him, you know, but we're here to talk hockey, and on a professional level, it puts the Montreal Canadiens in a little bit of a bind, probably for the first month of the season.
At least, because he's going to miss it at least 30 days, and we don't know from there. And I echo, Sean, exactly what you were saying. You know, good for Carey Price. These are hard things to do, hard things to admit, I would imagine. And you know, it actually plays into a conversation we'll probably have a little later on, you know, with Robin Lehner and what he brought to light, you know, in recent days, and the conversations now going on between him and the NHLPA and the league. But, you know, so I wish Carey and his family nothing but the best. How could you not? Montreal has experience with this in recent times with Jonathan Drouin as well, going, you know, through some issues that he had to deal with, some personal issues before coming back. So we wish him well, but this is a hockey podcast and we got to talk hockey. And Sean, now the Canadians don't have Carey Price and they don't have Shea Weber. This is a team that went to the Stanley Cup final last season. And we just did our Super 16 on NHL.com and they are not in the Super 16. They got some points, but not enough to get into the Super 16 power rankings in the preseason. I didn't have them in, and I don't believe, and no, you did not have them in either. So it kind of tells you what, you know, people are thinking about what Montreal is capable of this season. But this was that, those Super 16s and what the discussions, that's before the Carey Price news, Sean. So now I don't know how Montreal stays with the identity that it's had, that it had last season, especially in the playoffs, without Carey Price and without Shea Weber. I just don't see how they can have that. They're going to have to forge a new identity, but you know, it's hard to do that at the start of a regular season.
No, it is hard. And part of the reason that I didn't have him was I didn't know what Carey Price was going to be the first couple of weeks of the season. Mm-hmm. He's still coming back from surgery. So if you're looking for a silver lining, maybe that's it, right? He's not going to force himself back into the lineup before he's ready. You know, and I just want to circle back for 1 minute. You talked about how important it is and you know, how the support is crucial. What Carey's wife said, Angela, said today on Instagram, she put it better than anybody could. You know, she said that we have this platform as hockey players and hockey families to send messages, and Carey sending the most powerful message that you can possibly send. So I just wanted to circle back to that. I thought her words were brilliant. But look, they have Jake Allen, and this is what they got him for. Right. We talked last year about how Carey Price wasn't a 60 game starter anymore, and he would need rest in order to be at his best. And Jake Allen's one of the best backups in the business. He's been a number one in St. Louis. So if there's a guy that can handle that load while they wait for Carey Price to come back, I think Jake Allen's that guy. But they have so many other questions. What's their defense going to be like? Who's the number one center? You know, they lost a ton down the middle as well. So I just don't know who they're going to be. And I think there's teams that are much better positioned at the start of the season to be better than the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, and then you just look at the division, right? I mean, we're back to the old division setup now. So you're looking at the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions, Tampa Bay Lightning. You're looking at the Florida Panthers, who are certainly a team that should be on the rise after the experience and what they went through last season. You know, you're looking at the Boston Bruins, you know, who are not going anywhere. They're still going to be good. We'll see about, they have their own question marks about goaltending, but with Tuukka Rask gone and Linus Ullmark and Jeremy Swayman in, so they're still the core is still intact. This is still a very well-coached, well-oiled machine. And you got the Toronto Maple Leafs too, you know? And so right there, I'm saying those four teams have got to be ahead of Montreal, you know, within that division. And then, you know, Ottawa, Buffalo, Detroit, you know, obviously they are, I would say, below Montreal at this point. But you're right in bringing up Jake Allen, and he is a quality backup in the league, and he's been a number one, as you mentioned. But Carey Price sort of epitomizes what the Montreal Canadiens are. He's the star player. He's the face of the franchise. He's the guy that everybody relies on. You ask anybody on that team, they stick their chest out a little bit further when they know that he's playing behind him and he's playing well. And to have that element missing, it takes that air of confidence that you can, you know, you're in every game. As good as Jake Allen can be, he's not Carey Price. And it takes that element away. And then on top of that, you're taking away Shea Weber, who, for all intents and purposes, you listen to Mark Bergevin, their GM, his very well could be done for his career. That element of size, power, physicality, leadership, that's gone too. And then Philip Dano. I thought Philip Dano was a huge loss for this team. You know, he goes to LA and signs a contract. So I just don't see how Montreal can make up for it. They've got some interesting guys. Like Cole Caulfield's going to be a must-watch player. There's no question about it. This team's a team you still got to watch, but I just don't see how they can push ahead. And that loss of Carey Price for however long it's going to be, that's just like, that's the sucker punch they couldn't take, I think.
Well, they also have back a healthy and happy Jonathan Drouin, and I'm interested to see what he does. But I'm going to disagree with you, and I know this is shocking that I'm going to disagree with you about your point about Jake Allen and how they can't have the same confidence. I look at our guest from last week and Jack Campbell, right? Like, you're confident in your goalie when he's playing well. The Toronto Maple Leafs may not have been confident in Jack Campbell when he came in. When he didn't lose for 10 straight games, all of a sudden they're really confident. That's what it is with goaltending. It doesn't matter who you are, what your pedigree is. You get on a roll and it's all over. So, you know, Jake Allen's proved that he can get on a roll. And I don't think it would take very much for that Montreal team to say, we're going to hitch our wagon to him while Carey Price is gone and he can carry us. So a couple of good starts and that confidence is right there.
Yeah, that's very possible. And by the way, you mentioned guest. We did have Jack Campbell last week. Let's tease our guest for this week. Coming up shortly, we're going to be joined by Seattle Kraken defenseman Mark Giordano, the former captain of the Calgary Flames. He's going to be jumping on with us, talking all things Kraken, Seattle, the hype, getting ready to get going there. Their opening night against the Vegas Golden Knights in Vegas on Tuesday. Expectations, comparisons, all that stuff. We'll hit on that with Mark Giordano. So we talked a lot, Sean, about Montreal. We'll see where that goes. And we wish Carey Price nothing but the best as he enters the NHL, NHLPA Player Assistance Program. But more goaltending. In Colorado Avalanche, Sean, Pavel Francouz, backup goalie, out 3 to 4 weeks with a lower body injury. Jared Bednar, their coach, has COVID. He'll miss the last two preseason games at least. But we're talking goaltending here. And Colorado, Darcy Kemper is now the number one. Philip Grubauer is in Seattle. They can rely on him, but he's been injury prone in, you know, the past few years. And now Francouz, who's been injury prone, he's out 3 to 4 weeks. It's not how you want to start. And I'm not saying this is the thing that this is not going to kill the Avalanche. They're still a very good team. You know, it's just one of those things where you're now going into the season, I guess, worried about something. And already your depth is being tested before game one, because now I would imagine they have to go to Jonas Johansson to be their backup to Darcy Kemper. And it puts a little bit more on Darcy Kemper on a new team. Look, it's only 3 to 4 weeks and it's the backup goalie, but these things matter, especially on a team that's going to have to rely on their two goalies.
You know what I hate to hear when we talk about goalies? Lower body injuries.
Yeah.
All of their foundation is in their lower body. It's the most important thing. Their core is the most important thing they have, their power to push everything that they do. So, you know, we're talking a 3 to 4 week timeline. We don't know if it's done then, or if it's going to linger, if there's going to have to be load management. You don't know what's going to happen. So when you're looking at goalies and you're talking about coming into a season with a lower body injury, that makes me cringe a little bit. And then, you know, everything else you talked about, I don't know that Darcy Kuemper is a 60 game goalie. And if he's not, what do they do? The only good thing, I guess, when you look at this is they have a lot more runway, I think, than Montreal does. They know who they are. They know they're one of the best teams in the West. They can afford to slide a little bit early on and know that they can catch the pack later. And, you know, maybe they don't need to be at the top of the division or the top of the conference and kind of come at it from the back end, so that they have some time to figure out their goaltending. But it's not an ideal way to start if you think you're one of the legitimate contenders for the Stanley Cup, for sure.
Yeah. So there's two things I worry about with this. One, as you mentioned, Darcy Kuemper, I don't believe he hasn't proven to be a 60 game guy in the league. But with Francois out, you run the risk of overusing him in the first month to month and a half of the season. And that can come back to bite you later on, right? So you don't want that to happen. So you have to be careful and you have to be wary of that. And number two, so the Avalanche can score five a night, right? I mean, they could easily score five a night, but you don't want to get caught into playing that style of hockey right away. You want to, you want to score five, that's fine, but you got to play it the right way to get, you want 5-4 games. You don't want 6-5 games all the time. So that's the other thing I get concerned about here, is them thinking to themselves, oh, we have some issues in net, you know, we'll see how it goes, but you know, we'll outscore everybody. And it's not the right mentality to have for a team that needs to win in the playoffs and hasn't proven, by the way, they can get past the second round, in large part because of the fact they had a mentality of we'll outscore everybody. And then they couldn't get the puck against Vegas. You know, I mean, it's things like that happen. So those two things would be concerning for me. I agree with you. It's not like alarm bells are going off here, Sean, because they know what they are, but also let's look at the division that they're in. I mean, I'm hard pressed to find a team or teams, I should say, there might be one, multiple teams that are just gonna, you know, run away at the start of the season with great starts here. It's going to be a pretty packed group there, you know, in that 1 through 7 in that division, that I think that they're going to be okay. But those other two things do concern me. The risk of overusing Darcy Kuemper earlier in the season is very concerning.
And the other concern is if it lingers or if something happens to Darcy, what do they do? I thought it was telling today, you know, that in Montreal, they talked about if this happened, you know, thank God they got Sam Montembeault before it happened, because the prices were going to be astronomical. Once the league knows that you need something, the prices go up, and that's double for goalies. I mean, you're talking about a luxury item, and nobody's going to be like, oh, hey, look, the Colorado Avalanche, they're in a little bit of trouble, let me help them out. They're going to be like, oh, look, the Colorado Avalanche are in trouble, let me squeeze every possible pint of blood out of them that I can. So the price to fix that mistake, if it comes to pass, is going to be, if at all possible, is going to be ginormous.
Yeah. And by the way, ginormous is a word in the dictionary. My wife uses it all the time, and I was convinced it wasn't, but it is ginormous. It is a word.
It's a huge Scrabble word, buddy.
By the way, so I have the Colorado Avalanche, Sean, winning the Stanley Cup this year. They're my team to win the cup. The team to play against them in the Stanley Cup final, because we do our predictions, you know, with NHL.com, the New York Islanders. Oh, by the way, they got some goaltending concerns too. You know, like my two teams that I have going to the Stanley Cup final, both have goaltending concerns before they even drop the puck. Semyon Varlamov, questionable now for the opener against the Carolina Hurricanes on October 14th, a week from today. Ilya Sorokin, you know, he's very good. They're a two-goalie team, but now you bring in, if Varlamov's not going to be available because of soreness, we don't know how long that would be the case. Ideally, it's not a long-term thing. He hasn't really ramped it up yet in training camp at all. You got Corey Schneider there. So again, look, there's some goaltending concern on another team that, for my estimation, has no holes. But if Varlamov's going to be banged up a little bit here, if it's going to be lingering, then there's a hole.
Yeah, for sure there is. And again, any kind of goaltending issue as a coach makes you crazy, because there's no certainty there. There's, you know, we talk about great coaches, and I can't think of a great coach in this league that they didn't have a great goaltender. Mm-hmm. They're like the ultimate security blanket. And now you don't have it. They've taken away your security blanket, and you're kind of looking around for something to console yourself with, and it's not there. And you're like, oh my God, what do I do now? I got to do this, and I don't feel comfortable doing this. So the comfort level goes away pretty quickly. But out of all of them, this one seems to be the least pressing. Mm-hmm. Just because of the situation they have there, the way they play defensively, I think you can put goalies into that situation, and they could be a little bit better than maybe they are in another situation. And the fact that nobody seems to be overly concerned in New York, not that you would know, because that's a pretty tight ship there, but it does not appear to be a reason for major teeth gnashing at this point.
Yeah, they don't do upper lower body. It's total body. It's a body injury is what you hear. But I will tell you, Sean, I got to say, and I'm going to put this out there. If there's a guy who I would love to see have a renaissance in the league, it's Corey Schneider. You know, I would love to see Corey Schneider get that second, third, whatever it might be, chance and make good on it. He had a good preseason game. He's just, you know, I mean, he's one of the best guys I've dealt with in the league. And he just hasn't had a good run here. It's been a run of bad luck for Corey Schneider. And you just, I would like to see him get an opportunity, and this might be it. You know, if Varlamov is going to miss some time, Schneider's going to get some games.
Yeah, it would be awesome. I mean, he's a great guy, and he was never right again after his injuries. And again, that's what we talk about with goaltenders. Once they're hurt, especially in their lower body, they start to compensate. They pick up bad habits to try and protect whatever the injury is. And Corey never got right. Like, you think about right before he was injured, the run that he was on, he was fantastic with the Devils. So it would be awesome. And I always pull for guys. Like, he's had numerous opportunities where he could be like, things aren't going right for me. I've made my money. You know, I'm going to go and do something else. And he's plugged along, and he's, you know, ridden the bench. He's been the number three goalie. He's done whatever's been asked of him for one more chance. And those are the guys you pull for when they finally get that chance.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Just a reminder, we're going to be joined by Mark Giordano here shortly, the Seattle Kraken defenseman, getting ready to start the inaugural season against the Vegas Golden Knights on Tuesday. And Sean, should we talk about Robin Lehner now and what is coming of that? I guess it kind of circles back a little bit in a way to the Carey Price discussion as well. Robin Lehner, you know, put a lot out there. Let's just say that he put a lot out there in regards to, you know, prescription drugs and mental health and player injuries, especially with Jack Eichel, his former teammate in Buffalo, put it all out there on social media. And the good thing about this, the thing I didn't like about this was kind of just allegations tossed around that he was, you know, kind of tossing these things around, especially to Elaine Vigneault, just on social media. But the good thing about this, Sean, it looks like, you know, it sparked a conversation about what, you know, Robin Lehner's concerns are in the league with the league and the NHLPA. And, you know, if they can get talking about issues that might be pervasive in the league that we aren't necessarily always aware of behind the scenes, well, that can only be a good thing.
No, it's a great thing. And anytime you're having conversations, that's fantastic. My concern, I guess, and he's had conversations with the PA and with the NHL, and he's moved forward and said, you know, I'm happy with the tone of the conversations. I think things are going to happen here. But in his comments, when he finally spoke about it, he was worn out. You could look at him and you could see it had been a tough weekend for him. He posted on Friday, and by the time Monday, Tuesday came, he had the weight of the world on him, right? And it's something that he feels he has to advocate for. He's been so open about his own issues, his bipolar issues, everything else, and he doesn't feel like he can be quiet anymore, and that he was advocating for Eichel and he was advocating for other players and taking that weight on. But you worry as the season goes along, there's so many demands as a number one goalie. And that's what he is now. Marc-Andre Fleury's gone. His security blanket's gone. He's the number one guy for the first time in a long time. And that's a different mentality than sharing the load with the Vezina Trophy winner. it's much more difficult mentally when you're playing two out of every three games, three out of every four games, losing streaks. There's no escape. So, you know, you wonder how much he takes on mentally to do the things that he does. And now to juggle that in season with being a number one goaltender on a Stanley Cup contending team, it's a big load to carry.
It is. And look, I mean, you mentioned it. He's been very open with his own issues, right? So when you know of these issues and you're aware of what a player has gone through and how honest he's been, and he's taking on a lot mentally, and a lot of the issues are through mental health, you worry about that player. Like, I'm sorry, like, you just have to have concern. And I don't mean, I don't mean just necessarily, it's everything. Like, it's concern about everything. It's about him as a person, which obviously comes first, but it's about him and his ability to do his job to the best of his ability without, like you said, that security blanket. I wonder, though, Sean, if him bringing this on prior to the start of the season and almost like starting the conversation, but being able to, you know, handle the big part of the, you know, the news cycle, shall we say, before the season begins, if that will in a way help him be able to manage, you know, the voice he wants to have and the change he wants to elicit, but also the workload that he's going to have. This didn't come out in November during a losing streak. It didn't come out in, you know, late October, you know, when he's got, you know, to play 3 and 4 or something like that. This before the season, I wonder, and I don't know, because, you know, you're jumping inside the mind of a person. It's very hard to do that. But I do wonder if, you know, putting this out there, getting this off his chest before the season begins will help him, you know, down the road.
Well, I think it will help him because I think he said this, you know, he can't sit idly by anymore and he can't swallow these things that, to him, that's what got him in trouble in the first place, was kind of having these things happen and just going along and not saying anything. So in a way where you or I might just kind of eat it and not complain about the things, you know, that we're unhappy about with at work or whatever, he feels better when he says it and starts that conversation that other people might find uncomfortable. He appears to be comfortable in very uncomfortable places.
Yeah. And now he's got to do it, like you mentioned, as the number one guy without that security blanket. So it's fascinating. A lot of goalie talk there. It's fascinating to see where it all goes, but let's get to our guest. We've waited for him long enough. Mark Giordano, Seattle Kraken defenseman, former captain of the Calgary Flames, kind enough to join us. We talk a lot about Seattle and, you know, the start of the season, the hype, the excitement, the team coming together. So here's that interview with Mark Giordano. Mark, thanks so much for jumping on with us. I got to ask, I mean, talk about this Seattle buzz. Like, what are you feeling out there? What are the fans feeling? What can you gather from the excitement level as this thing is now less than a week away from getting going for real?
Yeah, no, it's been great. I think since the, you know, since we came in for the expansion, the draft, I think that was an eye opener for a lot of us, for the guys who are here. The city's definitely has a huge buzz. A lot of excitement around the team. A lot of, you know, we had a good opportunity this camp to visit some other cities. We went to Kent to play, and then we went to Everett to play. And the buildings were packed and the fans were great. So it's been a good camp for us. People are definitely excited about the team around here and we're excited to get it going too.
Are you comfortable in Seattle yet?
Yeah, it's been a pretty smooth transition for myself, for my family. We found a nice place to live. The practice facility is top notch. Everything that the team has offered has been great. I mean, it's just been top notch and it's made it a really, really easy and smooth transition for players. So it's been great.
Mark, big picture, what do you think this team is capable of? You know, I mean, is this team capable of being, I don't want to say Vegas, but, you know, is this team capable of being a pretty good team here that, you know, can challenge for a playoff spot, can make the playoffs, can be that type of team this, with the roster that you have assembled so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone in here believes so. And, you know, we're definitely not playing we're playing to win. That's the thing. At the end of the day, our team, you know, the reason obviously why we get compared to Vegas is we're in the exact same situation they were when they came in. I mean, you have 30 new guys who have all come from different teams. So our focus right now is to get our systems down, our style of play down. And I really think we have a lot of guys who haven't hit their ceiling yet on our team as NHL players. And that'll be huge for our team. If you know, certain guys who get opportunities they've never had before really, really hit their max potential.
Mark, you've been a leader at so many levels. And one of the things that I'm really curious about is when you come into an organization, generally you have the ability to lean on the foundations of that organization, whatever the identity is, whatever the history is, the culture, all those things that players gravitate towards. This was a blank slate when you walked in. How much different has it been to establish those things instead of amplify them?
Yeah, it is different. And I think it's a pretty unique situation for all of us, but it's also a great, great situation, a great opportunity for a lot of us. I mean, if you look at it from that standpoint, we get a chance as players and as coaches and everyone in our organization really to create the culture and identity of the organization. So it's on us. I think we've got off to a good start, and hopefully we keep going in the right positive direction and just keep building. I think we've done a lot of good things so far, but we have a lot more to do.
You know, I was talking to somebody recently and, you know, about this upcoming season, just the, you know, the NHL season as a whole, Mark, and they were saying it feels like a refresh because full training camps are back, you know, 82 game season is back, new TV partners in the United States for the NHL and ESPN and Turner. I wonder, it got me thinking, like, does this feel like a refresh for you too? I mean, is this, it's all brand new. Has this been refreshing for you after, you know, years in one place to move and start something brand new? Is it a refresh?
Yeah. 100%. I think, you know, I have a lot of excitement coming to the rink every day. I feel really good about myself, coming in. So that's a lot of the battle. And then, you know, being around such a young team, a lot of young guys, they keep you energized and being a part of everything around this new organization, new team, for sure. And then the other part of it is, you know, I hadn't played in front of fans in a very long time to get a few exhibition games in mm-hmm. front of sold out buildings, loud crowds. It was pretty, you don't realize how much you missed it till you play in front of them again. And it was pretty cool. So yeah, a lot of excitement, a lot of energy. It's like that. Honestly, it's like that every season. But like you said, the last 2 years have been, there were some times where it was tough, and it's tough to come into the rink, no fans, not playing everyone in the league, not being able to travel with your teammates, stuff like that. So it's definitely a year I think a lot of guys are looking forward to getting a little bit of you know, that normal back into our routines. But there's still a huge issue out there with Corona, so we have to be careful. But I'm looking forward to playing a full schedule this year.
Have you allowed yourself to think at all about what that first game in Seattle is going to be like? You mentioned you've played home games, but they've been scattered throughout Washington, and you're going to start on the road while they finish the building up. They're almost there. But have you, in whatever little bit of downtime you've had, thought about how crazy that night's going to be when you are finally on display to the fans that have waited so long for this?
Yeah, man, like really looking forward to that one. I mean, it's going to be an electric atmosphere, that's for sure. You can already tell. I'm sure it'll be a pretty special show that the crew puts on here in Seattle. It's been top notch since we've been here, so really looking forward to that one. And the other one, like honestly, the one in Vegas is going to be pretty cool too, having to go there and play in the opener for them. We know how electric that building can get also. So we're, you know, we're going on the road here for the first six. I'm sure we'll get a bunch of home openers, which will be cool. And then to get our looking forward to ours here when we get it against Vancouver. That's a big one.
It's interesting. You're going on the road for the first six. Wherever you guys go, you're the story, you know, because you're new. And the questions are going to be similar. And you've probably answered them a ton already. And it's also going to have some results attached to them as well. Is that something you have to prepare for? The understanding of Seattle for at least the start of the season, the Kraken, wherever you guys go, you're the storyline.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. We do. I think, you know, we look at it as every night we're going to have one super motivated guy who's playing his old team, who let him go in the expansion draft. But all of us, I mean, we all have that mentality, and it's just, it's cool to have a buzz around your team. I'll tell you that. I mean, I was fortunate to play in a hockey market in Calgary my whole career where it was really important, and it was number one. We were the number one sports team in town. So looking forward to being part of a great sports town here in Seattle. I think there's, you know, with the Mariners and the Seahawks, and us, and the women's basketball, I mean, it's a great sports town here from what I've seen, and looking forward to being a part of it for sure.
You spoke at the beginning of the interview about how all these players are coming together and they have something to prove and they might have a bigger opportunity than they have before. You knew a lot of guys that came into this room from playing against them. Has there been anybody that's really opened your eyes and you've been like, wow, I had no idea this guy is as good as he is?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot. I think, you know, I've played, like you said, I played against a lot of guys for a long time. And, you know, Eberle's a guy who obviously always impresses you with his skill, Schwartzy with his shot, stuff like that. But guys who are, like you said, coming in, you know, on the back end, playing with Oleksiak, how he moves so well for a big guy and handles puck so well for a big guy. Fleury's really impressed me in camp, like not playing against him that much in my career. The goaltenders have been all great. So there's been a lot of guys, and that's what I mean when I say, you know, I look at a lot of guys who are great players, I think, who haven't been in opportunities, haven't had the opportunities that they'll have on our team. So looking forward to seeing what a lot of guys do. But what stood out most for me about our team in general is just speed and the pace of play that we're going to be able to play at is going to be pretty high. So it's a good thing for our team in this league, the way the game's played today, and hopefully that translates to wins.
Yeah, you might have just answered it in part, because I was going to ask you, you know, on the ice, what are you guys going to have to lean on in terms of an identity? And you have to establish it early to have success in the league. And, you know, you guys come in with a blank slate. Is it that speed and that attack mentality, or, you know, is it also, you know, more leaning on the D, which is an experienced group, with the goaltending, which is an experienced group, which is an experience there as well?
Yeah, I think pace of play, being aggressive is a huge key for our team, like you said, but also, very structured and playing well defensively. That's how you win in this league. But I think the way the game's played, you play aggressive, you play at a high level, high speed, and undercover. I think we have guys who can really have breakout years and put the puck in the net, and we can score some goals. So looking forward to getting started here and seeing how it all shapes out.
Mark, a little later in this podcast, Dan and I are going to do some bold predictions about the season. I'm going to put you on the spot right now. I want a bold prediction from you, either about yourself, about the season, or about the Kraken.
A bold prediction?
Yeah.
I don't know if I have a great bold prediction, but I predict Team Canada wins the Olympic gold medal this year.
He went out of the NHL to do it.
But he wasn't very bold about it.
No, that's not so bold. I thought you would say, you know, oh, the Seattle Kraken will win the Stanley Cup this year. You know, like that would be bold, Mark. But
let's try. Yeah. Try to go off the board and keep it, keep the bulletin board material at a minimum.
No headline out of that one.
Totally understand. I guess that doesn't, you know, kind of leads into my next question is there's going to be this, you know, again, like the Vegas expansion, their success. So there is immediate, you know, comparisons and what are Seattle going to do? Can they match that? You know, do you guys, I can't imagine you guys talk about that necessarily, but do you get a sense that expectations are high externally? They're not high internally, but are they high externally? And will you guys have to kind of manage that a little bit, you know, within the market, also just within the league, understanding that it could take some time here for the identity to be forged.
I think the one thing we have to be aware of as a team is there was a little bit of that with Vegas for sure. I remember when Vegas was coming in, no one really knew what they were going to be, but I'll tell you what, no one expected them to be a first place team, a top team. But there's not going to be that with us. Teams are going to be ready. They're going to know that how it went in Vegas. You know, we've had a similar sort of, we had the exact sort of same rules as far as expansion draft rules. So teams aren't going to be taking us lightly by any means. And we know that. And at the end of the day, I mean, I think we have to be confident in ourselves though, that we have the team and we have the players in the room that can get us wins and we have to expect to win around here. And so far that's been the mentality in camp for sure.
Do you look at that history at all? Have you talked to any of those guys that were involved in the Vegas situation or looked at it? Or is it, like you said, it's almost like anything, once there's history, you study the history and everything changes, so you can only use it so much. I'm curious how much you've leaned on that Vegas experience as you try and shape what's happening in Seattle.
Yeah, not much, to be honest. I think, like you said, it's... everyone around us is going to adjust because everyone saw what happened in Vegas and, you know, the quality of team they put together. So we have to form our own identity, our own path here in Seattle. I think we've done a good job of understanding that as players and as, you know, as an organization. And for us now, it's about believing too. I mean, everyone said it and everyone knows it. We got a lot of good players through the expansion draft. There are a lot of good players exposed in the league because of the way the rules are. And now it's on us to go on the ice and perform and get some, you know, get some wins together and get rack up the points and take that next step.
Last one from me. And I wanted to ask you just about getting to play and getting to know Dave Haxtell a little bit and getting, you know, his coaching style through camp here. What have you gleaned from, you know, the type of coach he is, the type of coaching staff that you guys do have there?
Yeah, it's been great. I think just Hack and then the coaches obviously are trying to get their systems in place, little details. Now we're into this final week here where we're getting down to our numbers, our team, and they can put like the finer details of the system into place. And I think that's going to be important here over the next 5 days, but just really open, easy to go and communicate with the coaches and get feedback from them and give feedback to them. So it's been, there's been some great meetings, some great conversations, and everything's rolling right now. And as the season goes on, that's really important to have that communication for, you know, adjustments and stuff like that. So it's been good.
Well, Mark, thanks so much for joining us. Dan and I are both going to get a little more bold. We both predicted that the Seattle Kraken are going to be in the playoffs. So we wish you luck in accomplishing that goal and that we'll see you that late in the season. But we really appreciate you starting the season by joining us here.
Okay, guys. Thanks for having me.
Great interview with Mark Giordano. A fantastic guy. Going to be a great leader on that team. And they're going to need it. Look, it's a hard road, especially with the bar that Vegas set. You know, people are going to expect them to be good. I expect them to be in the playoffs. I think you do too, Dan. Neither one of us have them good at the start of the season with our Super 16. They're both kind of on that outer bubble. But there's an expectation that they're going to be good in the division they play in. And I think it's going to be really important for, and you saw it in this interview, a guy like Mark Giordano to be able to temper those expectations and lead them through the wilderness. So I learned so much from that interview. I'm so happy we were able to catch up with him before the season starts.
And I think the important thing you said there, Sean, was in the division they're in. And that's the reason why I have them in the playoffs, is the division that they are in. If they were playing in the Central, I wouldn't have them in the playoffs, because that's sort of more of a gauntlet to run through, in my estimation, than it is in the Pacific. But I look at them with their defense and their goaltending. It should be good. You know, where are they going to get the offense? That's the biggest question, right? They don't really have a first line. So where's the offense coming from? They're going to have to manufacture that somehow, but they're going to have to win with a system of play, and they're going to have to win with defense, and they're going to have to win with goaltending. And they have defense. They have goaltending. We talked to one of their top defensemen just now, and Philip Grubauer is an excellent goaltender. When healthy, he's an excellent goaltender. And so I have him in the playoffs, as do you. I thought it was interesting that neither one of us did have them ranked, as you mentioned, in the Super 16. By the way, the Super 16 is on NHL.com today, Thursday. But you and I both had 9 teams from the Eastern Conference ranked and 7 teams from the West. The one team from the West that I would imagine both of us believe is a playoff team is that wasn't ranked is Seattle. But it also speaks to a little bit of an expected imbalance between the two divisions with the teams that they're in. I mean, you think about the Metropolitan Division and the Atlantic Division, and that, you know, you have two divisions there with 16 teams. And you probably have 12 teams in those divisions who believe that they should be a playoff team, 11 or 12. And I'm not 100% sure who have realistic expectations to be a playoff team. Everybody believes they're a playoff team who have realistic expectations to be one. Whereas I don't think it's the same in the West. And, you know, the California teams, you know, look, I mean, as we expect LA to be better, tough news, by the way, with Quentin Byfield's, you know, fractured ankle. He's going to be out indefinitely. I want to see him at the start of the year, and we won't. They should be better. Are they playoff better? I'm not so sure. The Ducks, not so sure. The Sharks have their own host of issues. So the California teams weigh down the Pacific a little bit. And I think Seattle, with their defense and goaltending, I think they're right there. And I think that they can be, at the very least, a wild card team.
Yeah, no, I agree. And if you look at my Super 16, my last two teams are both Western Conference teams. Mm-hmm. So I have 9 of the 14, top 14 coming out of the East. I think there's been a shift in the balance of power. You know, 3 years ago, it was the West, and a lot of that is the upper echelon teams, and they kind of bring everybody up as they try and compete with them. But, you know, I have Vancouver and Minnesota down at the bottom in 15 and 16. And I'm curious, you know, now that Vancouver has their players signed in Pedersen and Hughes, you know, how good they're going to be, how quickly. I think they're going to be one of the surprise teams in the league this year, and I wouldn't be shocked to find them higher in my rankings come Christmas time. But I also think Seattle's going to get better as the season goes along. I don't expect them to be good right out of the gate. There's too much to put together. Line combinations, systems, camaraderie, all of those things. I mean, we forget that they're building from scratch. Mm-hmm. There's nothing there. There's no identity. There's no common experience. There's nothing that's what these guys are creating. And, you know, that's what the Misfits did in Vegas. And they really caught magic in a bottle, I think, with the room that they had and their ability to come together so quickly. And it's going to be a little like Survivor, right? It's going to be that great experience, that great psychological experience to watch and see what happens as they develop bonds over the year and see who survives and how they prosper.
And look, they're not going to be able to hide from it. They're going to put it, you know, they're not going to be able to hide from the comparisons to Vegas. They're just not like, it's not fair. It's not fair to them. They're going to downplay it. No question about it, as they should, but that's going to be written throughout the season. It's going to be talked about throughout the season. We'll probably talk about it here, especially if they get off to a good start. If they get off to a good start, we're going to be looking at that. There's no question about it. You mentioned Vancouver. We both have them ranked 15th. By the way, only difference in team between the two, we disagree so much. And yet the only difference in teams that we have in our Super 16, I had Philadelphia ranked and not Pittsburgh. You had Pittsburgh ranked and not Philadelphia. That was it. So we differ on the Keystone State. But you mentioned Vancouver getting Hughes and Patterson in. Can we talk about Brady Tkachuk in Ottawa? I mean, this doesn't seem... Look, anything can change this quickly. You know, one phone call, one email, one text can change this very fast. But at the present time, it does not look like Brady Tkachuk is going to be in Ottawa to start, or, you know, in a Senators uniform to start the season. He's the one big fish RFA that is unsigned now that Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson are signed. And it seems like there's a difference of opinion on long-term, short-term. And Sean, I got to tell you, like, I like Brady Tkachuk. I think he's a good player. You know, he's not a game breaker. He's a good power forward. He's just, is this guy worth a massive deal for what he's done in the National Hockey League at this stage? No, he's not. Ottawa seems to be holding a firm line on that.
Yeah, well, they can hold whatever line they want. He's the key to their whole team.
Yeah, but they're not going anywhere this year.
He's their next captain. So you're gonna blow up the ship this year to prove a point? Like, there's finally starting to be some optimism. He's the best player on that team. He brings so many things that are intangibles. And I know, look, you could analytics all you want, and I'm not going to be one of those guys that's like, well, just give me the eye test. I understand analytics. I appreciate them, but I do believe there are players that drag others into the fight, so to speak. And if there's any player in any sport that drags somebody into the fight, it's a player named Tkachuk. Whether it's the old man or either of the brothers, they drag people into the fight. You can't help but be all in when you're around those guys. So to me, I think Tkachuk holds all the cards, right? He's the key to that team. He's going to be their captain. Nobody shied away from that, you know, and you're going to alienate him at this point over probably term more than money. I think the market's been set, and you could say he doesn't score as much as those other guys that have signed those deals, but he does other things that those players don't do. And I think in a total package, like I look, if I was a GM, I think I'm just as comfortable having Tkachuk as I am having Pettersson for very different reasons.
No, they bring you totally different skill sets,
but they're both hugely important, and you can build your team around either one, right? You can either have that guy that's just an anvil, who just sets the tone every night and is just, like I said, he's going to drag a really young, inexperienced team into the fight and make them hard to play against. Whereas Pettersson, he's going to score you the goals that you need that are going to be the difference in games. But he needs somebody like Tkachuk, like a light, right? He needs that guy to kind of run interference and take some of the heat off of him. And Tkachuk's going to need that guy that's going to score a couple of goals. He's not, neither one of them can do it all by themselves, but this is the going freight. And the argument now is whether you want to pay that going freight for 3 years or 7 years or eight years, you know, what's your choice? And it seems like the choice right now is three for the Senators, and the Tkachuk camp wants more.
Well, in that sense, I would reverse it if I were Ottawa. Listening to what you just said makes sense. I mean, I would want this guy in, you know, for the long term, but then it goes up if you do, right? I mean, the price goes up if you do. You look at Pettersson, 3 years, $7.35 million. I was shocked at how low that was, to be honest with you, especially when you look at Kirill Kaprizov got $9 million on a 5-year deal. If you're in that 5 to 7 or 5 to 8 window, your number, the AAV, the cap hit goes up. Ottawa certainly has the cap space, but do they, you know, we know the money situation, and, you know, do they want to pay it? I would want him in long-term because I agree with you on that type of, you know, that he is that type of player. But again, I do just wonder, like you say, he holds all the cards, and that's fine, but the numbers are what the numbers are, and they're good. They're good, but he's never, you know, 22 goals in his first year, 21 in his second, 17 last year in 56 games. you know, 45 points, 44, 36 points. He's not blowing it away here. Is you know, and I guess that's, you know, I understand it's not totally his skill set to be the one that's going to, you know, blow it away in points and be a top 10 scorer in the league. But then are you going to pay him like one? Are you going to pay him like a top 10 scorer in the league if he isn't?
Well, to me, the comparable, think about it's Milan Lucic. Well, no, think about Milan Lucic in his prime on a good team.
Yeah, but think about how much he regressed.
Well, these are the gambles.
Like, I would want a long-term deal with Brady Tkachuk, too, because of he's so young and he could do it. But I guess there is that. I'm talking in circles here, it feels like. But I guess it is that, you know, fear of regression for the style of play.
You can't. You have to assume that he's going to play for whatever you sign him for. Like, you can't game plan around injuries. Injuries happen. But like, I think about Milan Lucic, and he wasn't all those things that you talk about. And then he was a guy that you had the game plan around. And he was a guy that
feared, no question.
He was a guy that could turn a game around without ever shooting the puck on net. Never mind scoring. He didn't even have to have a shot and he'd turn a game around. You know, but he could score. And that's a whole different element than the guy that just runs around pasting people into the boards. Those guys have their purposes and are certainly valuable in an intimidation and all of those areas. But when you can do that and you can put up 25 to 30 goals, like that's what he is. He's still a young kid. He's going to continue to go up skill wise. So I just think the skill set that he brings is more valuable than anybody's given him credit for. And I think he's the identity of that team.
I bet you this comes in at like a 5-year deal.
Maybe, but he's going to miss the start of the season. And that more than anything else concerns me. You think about all the guys that have missed the starts of seasons and how bad their years have been and how injury prone they tend to be, because you just can't mimic it. Right, wherever he's skating, I assume he's still in Michigan, where he was with Pedersen and Hughes, when they were all holding out. You know, you could play against the best players in practice. You're never going to mimic what happens in a game, and you know, the later you come in, then that much further everybody else is ahead of you, and that much further you're behind. It becomes a problem really quickly.
The only thing is it's a little bit of a different situation than, say, the Vancouver situation, because, you know, the Canucks are looking to bounce back from what was a bad year and continue to build back up, whereas Ottawa is still, while not in the infancy stages of a rebuild, they're still in a rebuild.
No, they're not.
Oh, I think they are.
Their GM said they're not.
They're
you can only go by what their GM said. Their GM said they're not in a rebuild. They're ready to contend. You're ready to contend without your best player?
Nah, you got to have Brady Tkachuk if you're ready to contend.
Like, he's painted himself into a corner. They're ready. Let's go. Oh, by the way, we're ready. Let's go.
You got to get this guy in.
Yeah.
That's it. You're right. You're right on that. All right. A couple more things before we get out of here. The Olympics, we know that's coming up in February. The Olympic break is February 3rd through the 22nd. We're seeing some players, Sean, being named to Olympic rosters, the first three, shall we say, for Canada, Sweden, Finland, the U.S., and the Czech Republic. That's what I've seen so far. I don't know if I'm missing anything there, but no surprises, you know, in the names you're seeing: Canada, McDavid, Crosby, Petrangelo, the U.S., Kane, Matthews, and Seth Jones. Sweden, you got Landeskog, Hedman, and Mika Zibanejad, Sebastian Aho, Barkov, and Rantanen for Finland. And who was it? It was Palat, Pasternak, and Voracek for the Czech Republic. I guess it just gives you a little taste, a little added Olympics into the news cycle, I guess.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, like you said, nobody's debating these, right? Unless you really want to be like, well, I think so-and-so should have got the honor of being in the top three.
So-and-so is going to be on the team then. You know?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, this is just, hey, let's get some names in the news cycle and you know, go from there. To me, the one guy that kind of jumped out, and for no other reason than he had been painted as being done a little bit and being traded, was Voracek. Like, when I looked up his numbers to write up when that was announced, I'm like, well, oh my God, Jacob Voracek's still a really good player. Mm-hmm. And you know, thinking about it and the chance he has in Columbus, like, he could be one of the bigger bounce back players this year. I think he's in a really good situation with some good players to that really suit his game. And clearly not under the same pressure that he was in Philadelphia. So that's probably the name more than any other one where when I first saw it, I was like, really, he's the top three guy. And then looking at it, I'm like, oh yeah, he's a top three guy. But the top three for Finland are unbelievable. And there's more coming behind him. And I just got to give a shout out.
Yeah, here it comes. I'm
this week.
It. Yeah.
Our one of our listeners, Anders, from Finland, all over my case because I said that Finland wasn't in my top three. And he's like, how many times does Finland have to finish in the top three before North American journalists accept that that's who they are? And if anybody knows, you know, I'm like Team Finland's biggest supporter.
Team Finland and Newfoundland.
Yes, Team Finland's biggest supporter. It's either Team Finland or whichever the minnows go to the tournament, whether it's Norway back when Zuccarello and Thor Vikingstad were on the team, or whether it was Slovenia in Sochi with Ziga Jeglik. I'm the guy that covers those games, but I've always been the Finnish guy at the World Cup of Hockey in Toronto. As a matter of fact, you guys, for my birthday, because it was at the same time, got me the Finnish pullover because I had covered every practice and game. So I fully know what Finland can do, but right now, where we are in the tournament on paper, they are not a top three team. When they all gather in Beijing and we talk a lot about chemistry and all those things about Seattle, Finland, nobody does that better than Finland. And they may well be a top three team on the ice in Beijing. But right now, you look at the talent for some of these other teams, I don't see them in the top three. Yeah, sorry, Anders.
Those top three that they got, Aho, Barkov, and Rantanen, stacks up against just about anybody. Maybe this side of Canada with McDavid, Crosby, and Petrangelo. But you mentioned Voracek, Sean. I was looking it up. You know, the only other guy that probably would be tossed into that mix would be Hurdle, because David Krejci is now playing in the Czech Republic. So it ain't 1998 anymore for the Czech Republic. So there is that to consider, you know.
No, for sure. How about this for a name? Jágr.
Oh, I can't wait to see him in the Olympics. Are you
put him on the Olympic team? I don't think he has any interest in playing, but
come on.
Yeah, please. How awesome would that be?
He's got to go. Maybe that's your bold prediction. Jaromír Jágr plays for the Czech Republic in the Olympics. Is that your bold? We're going to do bold predictions right now to close it out. Is that it?
No, but I could add it to my list.
All right. I don't have a huge bold prediction. This is my, like, I don't know how bold my prediction is actually going to be, the one that I'm going to give. So I'll let you go first.
Oh, we're only given one? I have a whole list.
All right. I don't have a whole list. Go. Let's see what you got. Then I can compare if maybe I'm not, you know, if my boldness is, you know, more than I thought it would be.
Well, I'll start on a negative, which I feel a little bad about doing, but I think this is somewhat bold considering his production for the last several years. I don't think Connor McDavid's getting 100 points this year.
What?
I don't think Connor McDavid's getting 100 points this year.
Why?
Numerous reasons. One, luck. You know, he's done it every year since he's been in the league. At some point, you run into a little bit of bad luck. Two, he's not playing in the North Division anymore. Travel.
Pacific.
Yeah, no, of course. But travel and everything else is going to catch up to him more than it did last year. I just have a feeling. Not 100 points for Connor McDavid. He's still going to be in the 90s. It's not like he's going to fall into the 60s, but I just don't see him being a 100-point guy.
I'm going to counter that and go the complete opposite way and say he gets 120 or more points this year. And that, I guess, could be bold because he's never gotten that bold number. He's never gotten that number. It would be a career high. 90s bold. 90s are bold for Connor McDavid.
Dude, he scored 1.88 points per game last
year. I can't believe you're going 90s on him right now.
Yeah, so that's bold. Yours is like,
I know, but I'm just countering it, you know.
Here's another one.
All right.
Alex DeBrincat is going to lead the league in goals.
That isn't, like, you're way more bold than me. That's like, you're way more bold.
He's other than Austin Matthews, he was right there last year.
He's a terrific goal scorer. There's no question about it. And Taze is back.
And the defensive assignments are going to be spread out a little bit. And he's going to have a better guy pass into him more often. Mm-hmm. He's going to lead the league in goals.
All right. I'll give you my sort of bold prediction because I'll feel it. It's a very good one. Spencer Knight takes over as the Florida Panthers' number one goalie and wins the Calder Trophy.
Oh, my God. I'm having a heart attack. Oh, my God. How'd you come up with that?
Well, look, they got a guy in there with like a 25-year contract in Bobrovsky, right?
Who didn't start in the playoffs for the guy who you're saying is going to be the starter now.
He had two starts in the playoffs. And Bobrovsky's been the guy that's been tabbed as the number one going into the season. Like I said, I don't know how bold it is, but I do think it can be considered somewhat bold that a 20-year-old goalie is going to take over as a number one and win the Calder Trophy. Like that's not like me saying, you know, Connor McDavid's going to score 120 points.
Yeah, so, I'll stick with Florida and I'll outbold you.
I'm sure you will because I'm not very bold here.
Mackenzie Weegar is going to be the best defenseman in the state of Florida.
That's just downright ridiculous. And that has nothing to do with Mackenzie Weegar. I like him. I think he's a really good player. He's not the best defenseman on his team. He's certainly not the best defenseman in the state of Florida. There's three guys in Tampa who are probably better than him.
Telling you. Well, we can revisit it.
What are we judging that on? I mean, Hedman's better. Ryan McDonough's better. Mikhail Sergachev's better. And Aaron Ekblad's better.
In April or May, we can revisit it. Look, we had homework from Bob Bender, our producer, to be bold.
Yeah, that is bold.
To be both bold and beautiful.
I am not bold enough.
And I think I'm getting an A on this.
You are getting an A.
You want me to continue?
Go. Keep going. Yes.
Thatcher Demko's going to win the Vezina.
I didn't think bold enough here because I was thinking to myself, like, no, that sounds absurd.
Because we established a couple of weeks ago, Dan, that you're a very conservative human being.
I am. I guess so. You know, very conservative here. Thatcher Demko winning the Vezina actually wouldn't shock me because I like Vancouver. I think they're better. I think they're better defensively. He had good numbers on a bad team last year. Their shots against totals should be better. He should get more help. And I think they're a playoff team. So that actually would not shock me if Thatcher Demko were to win it. I don't know if I just sapped some of the bold out of your pick, but it would still be kind of bold, you know, to do that, you know, if he were to do that. I don't have another one. Like, I don't. I'm weak at this one.
I got like 15 more, but we don't have enough time to get into all of them and for you to mock them all with your conservative nature. So
I'm thinking of more and I'm going to come up with more for next week.
But before we go, I got to give you a shout out after kind of beating you up for the last 45 minutes.
All right.
You had the big exclusive this week, Dan, and we haven't even talked about it until the last minute of the podcast. Speaking of bold and beautiful, you're hanging out with the bold and beautiful here in New York, Henrik Lundqvist.
Yeah.
I'm trusting for this big one-on-one meeting you had in a swanky downtown hotel. You got a new suit out of it.
Definitely not.
But sat down, had a really enlightening chat with Henrik Lundqvist. I thought it was great.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. And I thank him. He was kind enough to do it. It actually started for a different story idea I have that I still want to get to. On Igor Shesterkin for the Rangers, sort of following in his footsteps in a way that Henrik, although not directly, followed in the footsteps of Mike Richter. You know, and at some, you know, come late January, Igor Shesterkin's going to look up at the Madison Square Garden rafters and see Eddie Jockeman's number, see Mike Richter's number, and see Henrik Lundqvist's number as retired numbers up there and know that he's the guy now. So what does that take to be the guy as those were? So that was where it started. But then, you know, Henrik and I just got talking about, you know, him, what's going on with him right now. And he was terrific. It was one of the best interviews I've ever had with him. Maybe the best interview that I had. The Q&A. And I had to make it a Q&A because he was so good. I just had to get myself out of it. Just put the questions in. You know, sometimes you just got to realize what you write isn't anything better than what he's saying. And what he was saying was really good. He feels good. He's in a good place. I thought one of the most interesting things that he said in that interview was that he felt really good. He was coming back even after the open heart surgery in January. He was determined to be back. He got back on the ice. He was skating. And then he just had an inflammation in his chest, and the pain was so severe. He said to me, I asked him, did it feel like a heart attack? He said, no, it felt like I had basically a dagger going through my chest and coming out the back. And it dulled, but it wouldn't go away. And he was hopeful that it would eventually go away. He knew it was going to take time. And then he had to stay off the ice for 3 months because of that. He gets back on the ice and early part of the summer, and he's skating, but he just doesn't feel right. The pain is still there. And come mid-August, August 16th was his last skate. And he said that he knew on August 16th when he went on the ice that there was going to be his last skate. And 4 days later, he announced his retirement. But he went on the ice on August 16th for reassurance purposes, just to be sure that it was the last skate, that it was the right decision. And in the end, he's at peace with it. You know, he's at peace with the decision. And now, for the first time in Henrik's life, the floor is open for whatever he wants to do. And he's got a creative side. He's got business aspirations, and he does want to stay in the game. So yeah, I mean, I encourage you, go read the interview on NHL.com. I was just the one lucky enough to ask the questions and put the words out there. He did the rest.
Well, it was great. And everybody should read it. I'm glad he's in a good place. And on that note, we're all in a good place here. So we're going to wrap it up for this week. We're already looking forward to next week. By then, we'll be at the start of the new season with ESPN and TNT broadcast happening. So really exciting stuff. But if this doesn't whet your appetite for the start of the regular season, I don't know what's going to.
Absolutely, Sean. It definitely whets my appetite. Hopefully it whets the listeners' appetites too. Tuesday night, it all begins. I'll be in Tampa. And don't forget, when you listen to the podcast, if you like it, rate, go on Apple Podcasts, whatever you get your podcast, rate and review us. Let us know how we're doing. Ask us some questions. Tweet at us at the rink, at @SRourke_NHL and at @DRosenNHL. And regular season is just a few days away. So enjoy the weekend. And then come Tuesday night, be ready to watch some hockey.